I don't know why she's with me. I only brought her trouble since the day she met me. If I was her by now, I would have left me. I would have walked away by now, broken away. Somehow instead she forgave me. She said a woman's gotta do what she gotta do. Even if it means she denied herself the truth. Cause when you're in too deep, you wake up when it's too late. You're falling in love in the worst way. And if you don't go now, then you stay. Cause I'll never let you leave, never let you breathe. Cause if you're looking for heaven, baby, it sure as hell ain't me. You walk. Why are we up this hour knocking pictures off the wall? Tell me what this episode, I guess it's my fault. The truth is never easy when you gotta get it out. And girl, I'm so exhausted, yes, all this makes me nauseous. This is the way that I am, you cannot alter it. I'm sorry that I couldn't be your fantasy. If this ain't what you want, then you should leave.
But still she stays.
Walk away.
But still she stays.
Standing in the heart of darkness, saying I know you got a soul even though you're heartless. How could any woman in her right mind be so blind to find something to save? Instead of walking with me, she should've
walked away.
She finds color in the darkest places. She finds beauty in the saddest of places. For such a beauty and headstrong city girl, could've had the world, but you're falling in love in the worst way. And if you don't go now, then you stay. Cause I'll never let you leave, never let you breathe. Cause if you're looking for heaven, baby, it sure is selling me.
As I fall, 1,000 miles an hour, downward. Now that you're gone, I guess it's true, words have power. I guess what I said left a taste so sour. In your mouth, you wanted me to see what life's like without you. And so I lay awake, watching DVDs. Season 1, season 2, even season 3. I'm sorry that I couldn't be inside your fantasy. But if this ain't what you want, then you should leave.
But still she stays.
Trouble since the day she met me. If I was her by now, I would have left me. I would have walked away. But you're falling in love in the worst way. And if you don't go now, then you stay. Cause I'll never let you leave, never let you breathe. Cause if you're looking for heaven, baby, it sure is selling me. So walk away.
So if you won't, then I suggest you
walk away.
I thought we'd start off by talking about your book that has come out recently.
Sure.
Extra 2%. I actually live in Clearwater near Tampa, so I found that interesting.
Absolutely, cool. Sounds good.
All right, so tell me a little bit about the book.
So it's called The Extra 2%, How Wall Street Strategies Took a Major League Baseball Team from Worst to First. And the premise is talking about the Tampa Bay Rays and how it wasn't just that they were a bad team. They were a laughingstock. You know, they had an owner who was, he just wasn't a very swell fellow to own a baseball team. He really pushed around local government and local merchants and had an outsized personality, and he just wasn't the right fit. You know, there's a guy named Rick Dodge, who city administrator, played a huge role in getting the team to Tampa Bay. And I hope it's him that said this quote. I believe it was. He said that Vince Namoli was like General Patton. He was a great in wartime, but not great in peacetime. I thought that was pretty apt. And the story goes on to talk about the new regime and how they made a bunch of different changes, really to process more than anything. It wasn't any one thing. It was a lot of little things, hence the name The Extra 2%. And that's kind of how they became good and how they ended up winning two pennants in 3 years. And although it is a book about the Tampa Bay Rays, and although you guys are based down in Florida, it's a baseball book. It's a business book. It's a theory book. It talks about smart thinking. So honestly, if you don't give a fig about the Tampa Bay Rays, there's good reason to read it anyways. It should be an informative 250 pages for anybody who picks it up.
Yeah, it's a very interesting premise. So I'll have to check it out, definitely. So when you say the Rays started, I guess, was it the year they made it to the World Series? Was that kind of the first year they got their stuff together?
No, I mean, the new regime took over in 2005. Stu Sternberg, the owner. Actually, they were in by 2004, but they officially took over majority control of the team in 2005. And pretty much from the get-go, the processes were smart. I mean, back in 04 even, when Sternberg wasn't the majority owner and Matt Silverman wasn't quite the team president, Andrew Friedman wasn't the general manager yet, they were already making moves or trying to make moves on behalf of the team. They actually approached B.J. Upton way back then. He was a teenager, I believe, still in the minors, and said, hey, you want a long-term contract. It didn't work out. But you know, they kept that in mind. They said, well, if we could get somebody who's still in the minors to sign this kind of deal, there's risk involved. Guy could break his leg or who knows what. But there's also a possibility that he becomes a star and then they get a big bargain. And a few years later, they ended up doing that with Evan Longoria. They signed him in 2008, which was the first pennant season, their first winning season in team history. And that set them on the right path. But really, they had these smart ideas and sound processes in mind pretty much from day one. So, you know, a few years for the team to go from worst to first, as it were, but they were doing things right pretty much from day one.
Yeah, I know the Rays definitely have a great farm system they've been building off of, so.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Baseball America, everybody who follows farm systems, they basically consider the Royals to have the best system right now. It's pretty close. And the Rays to be number two, and the Rays just finished a draft in which they had 12 of the top 89 picks, which is unprecedented in the history of the Major League Baseball draft, the amateur draft. So could get even stronger if some of these picks work out. Yeah, very strong farm system, and it's really necessary for that club because you're going up against the Yankees and the Red Sox with a payroll a quarter, a fifth the size. You have to find a way to make it work. And drafting and developing players, that's how you make it work.
Yeah, I feel like the Rays really call up a bunch of players each season, too.
I'm sorry, say again?
I feel like the Rays kind of call up some key players, too, each season, so maybe that affects their ranking in Baseball America.
Yeah, you know, that's true. They do call up a lot of players. It's funny. It kind of runs both ways. They call up players, but they're very shrewd about it. There's something called the Super 2 deadline, which is basically has to do with salary arbitration and things of that nature. And I hope that you can't call up a guy until a certain date if you want to save money. And the Rays inevitably make absolutely sure that they don't go past that date. And so even though they do call up a lot of players, necessary part of their operation, it gets a little frustrating because you see guys really performing in the minors and you know that they're going to be good if they get called up. And you have to wait and you have to wait and you have to wait. Last year was Matt Joyce and Jeremy Hellickson. Those two guys are now two of the better players in all baseball, really in their first full season. And we knew that they were ready, but we had to sit and wait. And this year, there's a guy named Desmond Jennings. They have another outfielder, Brandon Guyer. There are some really good players who could definitely help the club, but we kind of have to sit and wait, unlike in, what, hockey, any other sport, you know, basketball from the D-League, whatever. Any other sport, you can call up anybody you want, but in baseball, there are certain rules that mean you have to do it at a certain time.
Yeah, that's true. All right, now, talking about the AL East, last night the Red Sox took first place after beating the Yankees. So who do you see in the long run coming away at the top of that division?
The Red Sox are the best team in that division. If Dustin Pedroia is hurt, you know, if he ends up having knee surgery, that really is an equalizer. He hasn't had a great season this year, but he's still a terrific player. And if he's out, then that evens things up a little bit. But, you know, I was on the Red Sox at the beginning of the year as the best team in baseball. I felt they would make the World Series. Even after the slow start, I still felt that they were the best team in this division. And, of course, now they've gone on a run and they've taken over first place. And I absolutely feel that way. I think that you're talking Red Sox, Yankees, Rays, Jays, Orioles is pretty much the pecking order of this division as it stands.
The Yankees kind of lost some semester they had. They had maybe the past few seasons. Maybe they're getting old, whatever. But do you think a current roster and with the Red Sox, I guess at the top of the division, even the MLB, do you think the Yankees can still make a run to another championship?
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, there's a wild card in baseball, and I do think the Yankees can and probably will, or at least have a very good chance to win the wild card. And, you know, you often get two teams from the AL East. that get into the playoffs. That's happened the last several years. Even when the Rays won two of those last three division titles, no problem. You know, the Yankees were the wild card 1 year, and the Red Sox were the wild card the other year. So, you know, if the Yankees fall two or three games short of the Red Sox, it's not much lost luster. That still means that they're probably one of three best teams in baseball or four best teams in baseball, and they can compete. Every year they get older. I mean, we all get older, but they replenish, too. They got, you know, last few years, Mark Teixeira and CeCe Sabathia and some guys who are not super young, but younger, you know, in their late 20s or coming up on 30, and they're prime. So they do a good job of spending at the top of the market. The one thing that hurt them a lot this offseason, they went after a guy named Cliff Lee, one of the best pitchers in all baseball. They offered him a boatload of money, and he signed for less money with the Philadelphia Phillies, which was pretty interesting. And Yankees, usually when they go after somebody, they tend to get him. So that was a rather surprising turn of events, and it absolutely hurt the Yankees because they could really use another really good starting pitcher at this point.
Right now, would you say the Sox are team in the Phillies? You had to choose head-to-head?
Absolutely. I don't think they're all that good. They have great starting pitching, but they're off. Defensive suspect. Chase Utley's not the guy that he was. They lost Jason Worth, who's quite a good player. He's not having as good a season this year, but he's still an excellent player. Yeah, it's one of those things where they have a good record, you know, but you look top to bottom at that roster, the Red Sox are better team than the Phillies, yes.
Yeah, I think that's going to be an intriguing World Series matchup if it happens, though. Two great starting.
Sure. Yeah, I think there are a lot of intriguing matchups this year. I mean, for the record, I picked the Red Sox and the Brewers, actually. I like the way they upgraded their starting rotation. They're hitting the heck out of the ball lately. They're a good team. You know, the Giants have terrific pitching, and their defense is now somewhat improved after being really suspect at the beginning of the year. But second to last in runs scored in the league. You know, but if they get into a World Series situation against the Red Sox, I don't know. Could they shut down the Red Sox bats? Could we see a bunch of 2-1 games? That could happen, too. So I think there are all kinds of different scenarios that are interesting. The Rangers were very good last year. They're asserting themselves this year. They're probably going to win the division again. They could be interesting in the World Series. Heck, the Cleveland Indians are in first place. A lot of great stories in baseball. And I don't know. As a fan of the sport, yeah, it's great if you have, you know, Yankees, Red Sox this and Red Sox Phillies that. But if the Brewers play the Rangers, I think that would be compelling, too. There are all kinds of good reasons to watch this year.
See, who's going to take the Cubs in the NL Central?
Yeah, I think that they have a pretty good shot at it. They have excellent talent. You know, give credit to the Cardinals, though. Gosh, they lost Adam Wainwright, their co-ace, along with Chris Carpenter, really. And it's just amazing how they've been able to pick up the slack. Jaime Garcia, young guy, rookie last year. You know, he's picking it up this year, too. He's been great. He's pitching like an ace. They've got a Kyle McClellan. They converted him from the bullpen. He's been terrific. They just have a lot of talent, and not just a lot of talent. They have good coaching, quite frankly. Dave Duncan, their pitching coach, does a great job of converting guys, sometimes guys who are not as impressive, into frontline starters. And that combined with, of course, Albert Pujols and Matt Holliday and Lance Berkman being a great and unexpectedly big boost to that team. I mean, they've got the pitching. They've got the hitting. That's a strong club. So you look at the Brewers and the Cardinals, and let's throw the Cincinnati Reds in there. They didn't win the division last year. You know, that's going to be a great race, maybe the best race in all of baseball in some ways, even though it doesn't get as much attention as, let's say, the AL East.
Yeah, I think top to bottom, I think even maybe have the kind of firepower having the AL East, Yankees, Sox, and Rays might be fun.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you look at the Brewers, they got Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder and Corey Hart, and Ricky Weeks is fantastic. That's a pretty deep lineup. That's as good an offense. I can make a case for you that offense is, if not quite as good as the Red Sox and the Yankees, it's in the same ballpark. I do think that those are strong clubs. Yeah, but of course there's an incentive when you're in the American League, especially in the AL East, because the Yankees and the Red Sox exist. The rest of the league just needs to try harder, basically. I mean, you could win your own division, maybe, but to get out of that league and win the pennant, you got to do a lot. So it kind of raises the standards. Maybe it forces you to spend more money. Maybe it forces you to have a smarter general manager. But that's how it goes. You know, when you have weak competition, I mean, it's anything. If you're playing pickup basketball in the park, you're playing against a bunch of six-year-old kids, okay, that's cute. You can just kind of do whatever you want. But if you're playing against, you know, guys who play D1 basketball, you better step it up and you better do what you need to do. So I think it's a reaction to the level of the competition in some ways.
How impressed are you by the Pirates? After they're 500 for who knows first time, how long is this season?
Yeah, I mean, you could see it coming with the Pirates a little bit. I still don't think that they're all that good, but they've got some hitting now with Andrew McCutchen's a good player, Neil Walker. Still disappointed in Pedro Alvarez. They're waiting for him to break out. The encouraging thing to me is what they're doing with their minor league system. You look at some of the pitching that they've got going. They just drafted Garrett Cole, number one overall from UCLA. He could be a starter on that club in 2 or 3 years. Drafted a couple of really promising high school arms last year. So they're not afraid to spend on the draft and on player development, which is good to see. For a while, they were going for signability picks. The most infamous story is, I believe, it was 2002. I mentioned B.J. Upton. He was a consensus number one talent in that draft. And the Pirates ended up passing on him and taking a guy named Brian Bullington, who was basically a signability guy, but they tried to justify it. They get up on the podium and they say, if everything breaks right, this guy could be a number three starter for us. Well, dude, if he's the number one overall pick and the most optimistic scenario that he'd be the number three starter, you're not doing it right. And in fact, it turns out that he hasn't even been as good as a number three starter. He basically isn't pitching anymore. So, yeah, the Pirates have been better at that, and it is a good sign for their future.
Yeah, it's instilling very much confidence in your guy if they say number three.
Yeah, no, of course not. I mean, it's a sign of just really incompetent management. Not only not drafting well, but kind of being tone deaf and not understanding what the draft was about. The last two general managers and a couple scouting directors as well have just not been all that great with the Pirates. It's good to see them kind of picking it up. And, you know, baseball's cyclical. The Rays used to stink. The Brewers used to stink. The Pirates still aren't great, but they're getting better. Royals still have some work to do, but their farm system is better. That's a good thing. I think that there's a perception, oh, it's always Yankees, Red Sox. Well, there's a lot of parity in baseball. There's been more different World Series winners since 1984 than any other, more championship winners than any other sport, more than Super Bowl winners in the NFL or NBA Finals winners or any other sport. So there is parity. Yankees and the Red Sox have a great chance to make the playoffs every year, but the people that are, the team that hoists the trophy, it changes quite a bit from year to year.
I really like the Royals lineup too. I think they're young and dangerous.
And the Pirates you're talking about?
Royals.
Oh, the Royals. They do have an interesting lineup. Eric Hosmer's been a good call up for them. A lot of their best hitters are still in the minor leagues. Mike Moustakas is a great, promising third baseman. They have an outfielder named Will Myers. They definitely do have some guys. There's going to be some turnover still. There's still some weaker guys that are in that lineup. But as you go forward and turn it over, it could work out better. For them, it's going to be pitching. I mean, they've been waiting on pitching for a while. Again, they have some good pitching prospects as well. But it's still suspect. You know, they thought that they were going to get some stuff from some younger guys. Hasn't worked out yet, and they're still around.
Yeah, definitely AL Central after all the subdivisions.
Absolutely. I mean, the Indians have done a good job of getting themselves to first place, obviously, and now the Tigers are really starting to come on. I will say it's been disappointing for a couple teams. The White Sox, who were my pick to win the division this year, I thought they'd be better. They've struggled, especially with their hitters, surprisingly. And the Minnesota Twins, man, the most snake-bitten team in all baseball this year. Joe Mauer's hurt. Justin Morneau is coming off concussions last year. Delman Young got hurt. Nishioka, their Japanese import, got hurt. Francisco Liriano turned into a pumpkin. It's a disaster right now in Minnesota. And that's not a small payroll team anymore. This is a triple-digit payroll team that's really fallen on hard times. They're not the small-market lovable Twins anymore. They're the bigger spending and really struggling Twins at the moment.
His White Sox pick was based on Adam Dunn, actually.
Not just Adam Dunn. I mean, Alex Rios has been awful. Gordon Beck is starting to hit a little bit, but he struggled too. I mean, there are about three or four guys. They're just...
I guess we can move on to the NHL playoffs, because that's where the excitement is right now.
Yeah, NHL and NBA have both been great. I just wrote a piece for GQ.com about the NHL playoffs. More of a really fan piece. It was talking about the Bruins and their fans and Boston fans in general and how they're, quite frankly, a little bit entitled. I mean, they have all these championships in that city right now, and the Bruins would be the last one, although they'd complete the Grand Slam in the last few years. So there is that, but it's, you know, there's animus on both sides. The Canucks have thrown some cheap shots out there, and, you know, I think there's just no love lost, as they say, and the games have been very compelling. The first two games, you know, were closer, and the Canucks were the team that prevailed, and the last two have just been blitzes by the Bruins. I mean, they've outscored them 12-1 the last two games. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes. You know, if it holds, that home ice is what ultimately decides it, because that's what it has so far, or if we switch it up, or we're down to a best-of-three series here.
Because the Canucks, I guess, gave up three games to the Blackhawks early on. Everyone was doubting them, and they came away with Game 7, so maybe they'll get it together. And I mean, they just, after getting slaughtered by the Bruins.
There's no question. I mean, it's not just sports, it's hockey and it's playoff hockey. Things change and turn all the time. You can run into some big losses and come right back. So, you know, I don't think there's any particular panic with the Canucks.
I guess we move on to the NHL playoffs, because that's where the excitement is right now.
Yeah, NHL and NBA have both been great. I just wrote a piece for GQ.com about the NHL playoffs, more of a really fan piece. It was talking about the Bruins and their fans and Boston fans in general and how they're, quite frankly, a little bit entitled. I mean, they have all these championships in that city right now, and the Bruins would be the last one, although they'd complete the Grand Slam in the last few years. So there is that, but it's, you know, there's animus on both sides. The Canucks have thrown some cheap shots out there, and you know, I think there's just no love lost, as they say, and the games have been very compelling. The first two games, you know, were closer, and the Canucks were the team that prevailed, and the last two have just been blitzes by the Bruins. I mean, they've outscored them 12-1 the last two games. So it'll be interesting to see how this goes, you know, if it holds that home ice is what ultimately decides it, because that's what it has so far, or if we switch it up, or we're down to a best-of-three series here.
Because the Canucks, I guess, gave up three games to the Blackhawks early on. Everyone was doubting them, and they came away with Game 7, so maybe they'll get it together. And I mean, they just, after getting slaughtered by the Bruins.
Yeah, sure, yeah, there's no question. I mean, it's not just sports, it's hockey, and it's playoff hockey. Things change and turn all the time. It's, you can run into some big losses and come right back. So, you know, I don't think there's any particular panic with the Canucks.